This is the beginning of our second day, discussing, actually the third class, but the second day discussing the Sharanagati topic. I'd like to begin, each day with a little, each of the classes, with a little reminder and summary of the importance of, of this topic for success in Krishna consciousness. And I thought I would begin this one by summarizing the beginning of Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, which is a very wonderful, it's very scholarly and very enlightening description of the process of devotional service. Since today's topic is humility, it's one of the things that inspired selecting this, but as elevated a soul as Jiva Goswami was amongst the Vaishnavas at the time and still is, he refers to himself, the author of the Sandarbhas, as Jivatmaka. He doesn't even, it's a pun. Pun, you know the meaning of a pun? Play on words. Jiva means the soul. Jiva also means himself. So, one Jivatmaka has compiled this. So, he is that Jiva, namely Jiva Goswami. And the syllable ka means very small. Just like a child, the age of a child may be bala, and a small child is balaka. Small child. Jiva, Jivaka. So he's speaking of himself in a very humble way, a very insignificant Jiva has compiled this. Insignificant Jiva Goswami has compiled this. And to begin the compilation of Bhakti Sandarbha, he refers to, well, he gives credit to Gopal Bhatta Goswami for actually having done the work, and he just put it all together. The Sandarbhas, Bhakti Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, or Sat Sandarbhas, it's the notes of Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who, since his youth, he was the son of the chief priest of the Sri Rangam temple in South India, Sri Vaishnava Venkata Bhatta, and he was Gopal, little Gopal, who later became Gopal Bhatta Goswami, one of the chief followers of Lord Chaitanya. And he, Gopal Bhatta compiled notes on his study of all scriptures, on topic by topic by topic. I know one sannyasi who has, before there were computers, he traveled all the time in a van, traveled and preached and did college preaching, but he had detailed notes. Every time he read, he would note something about what he read, and then he would file that something according to a certain subject matter. And he kept very, 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 very comprehensive, detailed notes. Since he didn't have a computer, He just had this memory that he knew exactly where all these references were. Anyway, Jiva Goswami was certainly like that too. When he made references to different scriptures, sometimes very, very obscure scriptures, scriptures that today they're not even to be found. But he didn't have to go look them up in his library because he didn't have one, or look them up in his computer because he didn't have one. He just knew it in his memory, in detail. The entire Sanskrit text, exactly where it was. Immediate reference with his brain. This is, according to Nectar Devotion, one of the symptoms of intelligence is one has an excellent memory. So if any one of us, victims of Kali Yuga, have a hard time remembering things, give some idea of where our intelligence is at. Anyway, Jiva Goswami makes two references to indicate the essence of the message of Bhakti Sandarbha, which is the cause of our material condition and how to get out of it. So what is the cause of the material condition? He asserts it's forgetfulness of Krishna. You may forget a verse, but you shouldn't forget Krishna. But the material condition is we forget Krishna. And we forget Krishna deliberately by turning our back on Him and walking the other way. And to support this definitive, assertive statement, he quotes the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11:22-34. This is in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna's declaration. The translation reads, "The speculative argument of philosophers, some of whom say the world is real and some of say no, it is not real, both are based on incomplete knowledge of the Supreme Soul, and they are simply aimed at understanding material dualities. Although such argument is useless, persons who have turned their attention away from me, their own true self, are unable to give it up." The root problem is our deliberate turning our attention away from Krishna, and being addicted to that, being unable to give it up, just like an addiction. So this is where humility comes. Prior to actually overcoming the material condition, one has to become humble and recognize this is the embarrassment that I'm in right now. I'm in this material condition because I chose to be here. Narottam Das Thakur sings that wonderful song that knowingly I've drunk poison. How foolish. The poison of this material conception of life. So then Prahlad Maharaj is the next reference that he gives, 7939. This is Prahlad's prayers to Lord Nrisingadev, where he expresses to Lord Nrisingadev his recognition of the problem, his recognition of the cure of the problem, and his inability to follow the cure because of his enfeebled, weak position of attachment to his material condition of life. which is only an expression of his humility because he has no material condition of life. And this is one of the points that comes out in this Dainya or humility section, and that is that even if one, we'll refer to this again, but even if one does have the ability to perform something, the quality of humility gives one the feeling or permeates in such a way that one feels unable to do so. Even the ability is there, I'm unable to do so without receiving the mercy of Krishna. Those that are sitting right by the door are blocking. So if we can all move this way a little bit, then we'll get not right by the door. Is it possible to move this way a little bit and not block the door? Thank you. Hey, look at that, another row. Come slide over. Thank you. Okay, so here's Prahlad Maharaj praying to Lord Srinadev, chapter 9, canto 7. My dear Lord of the Vaikuntha planets, where there is no anxiety, my mind is extremely sinful and lusty, being sometimes so-called happy and sometimes so-called distressed. My mind is full of lamentation and fear, and it always seeks more and more money. This little boy, Prahlad. Thus it has become most polluted and is never satisfied in topics concerning you. I am therefore most fallen and poor in such a status of life. How shall I be able to discuss your activities? He's explained in the previous verses that it's through your presence is so auspicious that it gives us topics to discuss about you, and this is the means of deliverance from our material condition. But now here's his expressions of humility because of these obstacles. Lust, remember we said there's six enemies of the conditioned soul, there's six obstacles that prevent surrender: kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarja. So he says these are obstacles blocking my way, so I have no attraction for your topics, which he just got through saying is the means of deliverance. The means of the cause of bondage is turning our attention from Krishna. The means of deliverance is giving our attention once again to Krishna, particularly in the form of hearing and describing and absorbing our minds in Him that way. And the expressions of humility, which are part of the mood of a surrendered soul, is to recognize these enemies, these six plunderers, are preventing me from surrendering, or preventing me from achieving my connection of loving relation with you. So recognizing the peril of our material existence is an essential part of humility. And I need that blue book that these songs were copied from, and it's in the room here. So this is our humility section of the six limbs of surrender, and it comes at the Navi Yovana was asking yesterday, is there some importance about the sequence? And my answer was, different sequences will also work. In this particular presentation by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he presents humility first, and it remains a central element throughout all of the process of surrender. In other words, you can't begin without humility and you can't continue without humility. Expressions of humility are throughout all the songs. It's a natural trait for a Vaishnava. And being unable to be genuinely humble, you can't advance on the spiritual path. You cannot make progress unless there's genuine humility. So at least the cultivation of that humility has to be right there at the very beginning of spiritual life. So just to express this a little more clearly, the quality of humility, once it's established, is taking stock of my humble position. Therefore, I'm no longer independent of you. That's been my foolishness. I place myself fully in your care and surrender and dedicate myself fully to you. Then again, because of my meek and humble position, I'm feeling myself fully dependent upon you for my maintenance. Because of my humble position, I'm placing myself in your care and depending upon you for protection. My looking for protection outside of you is useless. So, Jiva Goswami explains there's a twofold process that's at work here. One is recognizing the false shelters that we have and isolating them, separating them from genuine shelter, and abandoning the false shelter, taking the positive shelter. That's all part of what humility is. Particularly recognizing the false shelter and abandoning it and calling out helplessly, Krishna, please give me your shelter. There's a very nice verse in the Padma Purana that helps us understand humility. In that verse, the two syllables of Namaha, Na and Ma, Namaha, just like that's there in any of the prayers where we're offering obeisances. Namo Mahavadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Namo Narayanaya Namaha. So, ma, in the word namaha, denotes false ego. And na is barring or excluding that false ego. Therefore, this word namaha is abandoning the pretentious, the false position of independence from the Supreme Lord. Just like in our common practice, our Vaishnava practice, is we pay obeisances to other devotees. I'm sure you're being trained to do that here. In the very early days, as a new devotee, first living in a temple, Prabhupada had given this instruction, and the devotees were in the practice, that when you, each time you see a devotee, the first time that morning, you pay obeisances to one another. And it's a very nice practice. It's expressing one's humility before another Prabhu. And of course, the other Prabhu feels the same and offers obeisances. And Prabhupada explained it's actually we're offering obeisances to the super soul. Not just the body, but respecting this lump of material ingredients. We're respecting the soul, but the soul is the seating place, the residence of the Supreme Soul. So how glorious. Please accept my obeisances. Within your heart is the Supreme Lord. Within the heart of the soul is the Supreme Lord. So to do some practice like this, this requires, or it denotes, humility. So we shouldn't do things in just a mechanical fashion. We should do them with the proper consciousness. Abandoning our independence from Krishna and accepting the position of subordinates to Krishna. If you remember, I read yesterday, Rupa Goswami, at the end of class, I read Rupa Goswami's description from Nectar Devotion, chapter 39, of the six principles of surrender. And the one that corresponded with humility was, as I mentioned just a moment ago, although I may have the ability to perform some particular activity, I feel myself unable to do so without the explicit mercy of Krishna. That feeling, that consciousness, with it a certain feeling, is the consciousness of humility. I'm not independent, that's the idea. One devotee calls that's our God project. I'm not God yet, but I'm working on it. My whole life is a God project. And humility is abandoning such a God project and recognizing, although I do have some abilities, independent of Krishna, it's not possible to fulfill these things, and certainly there's no happiness to be found there. I have no independence from Krishna. Now, one other point. You want to set this up? One other point about humility is going to come up later on, in after these first six limbs of surrender, but I'll mention it now because Jiva Goswami does. And that is that humility combined with self-surrender, that's the next one we're going to cover. They have their practicing stage in the beginning, but eventually they leap into the development of rasa, which is a very advanced stage of spiritual attainment. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his Brahma Samhita, he discusses that in his commentary. The commentary comes when Lord Brahma receives Gayatri Mantra. Brahma receives Gayatri Mantra, and it's the Kama Gayatri, and Bhakti Siddhanta is explaining about that particular Gayatri. You're not rewinding, are you? Did you just rewind it? No. I didn't ask you to rewind it, I just asked you to put it in. Can you monitor it and put it back at the spot where it was? Do you have your headphones? Can you monitor without our hearing it? Run through the first song and end it. Can you do that with this machine? You can't. Okay, we'll sing the first song again. Hare Krishna. Sahuku, could you get that little blue tape player from the desk? Just bring it. And you can monitor it through that. So here's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Quit, fell asleep? Oh. So here's Bhaktisiddhanta explaining Kama Gayatri and its relationship to surrender to Krishna. He writes, the meaning is that rasa is only the transcendental service of Krishna as the predominating aspect of the Absolute. By one's ego as the spiritual maid of the predominating Supreme, attended with pure devotion in the shape of one's entire self-surrender. This is Bhaktisiddhanta's complicated language in which he's expressing that when we abandon other shelters, other conceptions of who we are, and we take to the one conception that we are the eternal servant of Krishna, when that matures, just the fire. When that matures, we then have a situation where our relationship with Krishna unfolds. In other words, abandoning false shelters and taking shelter of Krishna alone is the position where rasa with Krishna develops. So what I'm trying to say here is that what we're doing at a preliminary stage, new devotees practicing and learning ABCs, ABC, maybe spelling a few words, cat and dog and house. We're learning some very basic things, like a child learning ABCs in school, learning the alphabets. We're at that stage, but at the more mature stage, if the same principles applied, they lead to a position, a spiritual position, where rasa can be developed. Reawakening of our natural loving relation with Krishna according to the particular rasa, constitutional rasa that we have eternally. These principles of surrender continue into very, very advanced stages, although our application of them is rudimentary at present. They're ever present throughout the evolving of bhakti. I'm going to read a couple of things from in reference to the process of surrender. One is from Bhagavad Gita, a purport, chapter 2, text 45. Prabhupada writes, self-surrender is called Atmanivedana. According to different authorities, self is differently defined. Self is sometimes considered to refer to the spirit self, or soul, and self sometimes is considered to refer to the mind or the body. Then he says, full surrender, therefore, means not only surrendering one's self as spirit soul, but also surrendering one's mind and body to the service of the Lord. As bhakti, we engage our mind, we engage our body in a mood of surrender to Krishna. Now here's a nice quote from Ramayana. Lord Ram is speaking. It is my vow. It's a strong beginning. Ram says, it's my vow that if only once seriously. One surrenders unto me saying, My dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage. I shall forever award strength to him. So, surrendering is very powerful. Surrendering is powerful not because something from our side happens. The something from our side is we're abandoning illusion. But what's happening from the Lord's side is He gives strength to the surrendered soul. So now we'll go to the songs themselves. And the first song of the humility section you have here in front of you, but it's not recorded. Buddhya Tomare Samsari Ashiya Pe Nana Bidha Yata. You see that page? So we're just going to go over the translation. Does it have the number 6 at the bottom of the page? Yeah. So it's the number 6 at the bottom of the page. This is, I'm going to read from the translation. This is the humility section where Bhaktivedanta Thakur is basically he's berating himself. He's making expressions of humility like we heard Prahlad speak in the Bhagavatam. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses, I forsook you, O Lord, and came to this world of pain and sorrow. Now I submit my tale of woe at your lotus feet. While still in the unbearable fetters of my mother's womb, I saw you before me. You revealed yourself, but briefly, and then abandoned this poor servant of yours. Now, the commentators of this song say that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is referring to the third canto Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter that's entitled The Movement of the Living Entity, where the living entity gives up the body from the previous life and enters into the womb of the next mother, and while in the womb of the mother experiences a lot more discomfort than the mother does. Mother's uncomfortable because of carrying the child, but the poor child is a lot more uncomfortable than the mother. And the details are described there, the worms biting and his back arched like a bow, and mother eats foods that are pungent and the gastric juices burn the skin of the child. And it doesn't sound very, it's just the whole description goes on for pages and it's pretty tough on the poor living entity. So in some cases, some living entities become God conscious. Now again, from yesterday, what is an impetus for becoming God conscious? Great difficulty. And to even just endure that great difficulty, it's a natural thing, calling to God. So the living entity prays to God. And in some cases, as described in the Bhagavatam and also in here, this prayer by Bhaktivinoda, he sees the Supreme Lord. And basically the prayer to the Supreme Lord is, please get me out of here. I'll do anything you say. I'll be your surrendered servant, no problem. But get me out of here. And then the next verse says, unfortunately, when the living entity leaves the womb, he's pampered and treated so delightfully by mother and relatives and coddling the child and fondling the child, and he thinks, hey, it's not so bad. After all. And he forgets. Well, it is bad, actually, but sometimes I think it's okay. At that moment I swore to worship you after taking birth, but birth came, and with it the network of worldly illusion which robbed me of all good sense. As a fondled son in the lap of my relatives, I passed my time smiling and laughing. My parents' affection helped me to forget the pangs of birth, and I thought, the world is very nice. Day by day I grew, and very soon I began playing with other boys. Shortly my powers of understanding emerged. I read and studied my lessons incessantly. Sound familiar? Traveling from place to place, proud of my education, I grew wealthy and maintained my family with undivided attention. Oh Lord Hari, I forgot you. Now in old age, Bhaktivinoda is sad. He weeps, I failed to worship you, O Lord, and instead passed my life in vain. What will be my fate now? So now we're going to sing together song number 3. There's 7 songs in this section. We're going to cover 4 of those 7. It's a nice section. So please feel free to sing along. You can adjust the volume.
Jovane jakona anamba jone koinu ki kuraka.
Again, he goes through like an autobiography from his youth to old age and describing very much like Prahlad Maharaj does, how Maya engages one in wasting time at every stage of life. When I was young, text number 1, I greatly desired to earn money. At that time, bearing in mind the codes of religion, I took a wife. Together we set up a household, wasted much time, had many sons and daughters. My heart grew heavy. The burden increased day by day. I felt my life at a standstill. Old age came, grabbed me, and made my mind fickle and disturbed. Diseases trouble me now, and constant anxiety has made me feverish. My heart burns from lack of satisfaction. And I see no way out, all this darkness, and I'm very much afraid. The current of this material, of this worldly river, is strong and relentless. A frightening gloomy death approaches. How I wish I could give up my worldly attachments. I would worship you, O Lord, but it is a useless hope. Now, please hear me, O Lord, for I am utterly helpless. Bhaktivinoda says, without your mercy, everything is lost. Please give me the shelter of your lotus feet. Expressions of humility. And recognizing the error that this 11th canto verse that Krishna speaks to Uddhava says, the cause of material existence is, I turned my attention away. And then all of the other activities were attention turned away kind of activities. And they robbed the vitality of my life. And so what is an impetus? I mentioned there were three impetuses for surrender. One is danger, the other is frustration, the other is intelligence. So imminent danger is there. Death is coming, just outside the door. And frustration, I've wasted it. Let me surrender. I've wasted my time, my energy, and my life. Let me surrender. And also just with intelligence, transparently seeing through the frail, false circumstances, the false promise. Yeah. The frailties of material shelter and the falsity of the promise of happiness. One can surrender just from intelligence. Now, the next one is really heavy. He just puts himself down really bad. Describing himself, basically like describing himself like Jagai and Madhai. There's nothing sinful I've not done. There's no more sinful person than me. I'm bad this way and I'm bad that way and I'm even worse in that way and there's nothing good in me at all. And because you're most merciful, Lord Chaitanya, please give me shelter. Basically, that's what the song is. Okay, so
Amaro jivono sada pahe rojo nati ho Thank you.
Okay, here he goes. This is the supreme act of self-deprecation. I am an impious sinner and have caused others great anxiety and trouble. I have never hesitated to perform sinful acts for my own enjoyment. Devoid of all compassion, concerned only with my own selfish interests, I am remorseful on seeing others happy. I'm a perpetual liar, and the misery of others is a source of great pleasure for me. The material desires within the core of my heart are unlimited. I am wrathful, devoted to false pride and arrogance, intoxicated by vanity, bewildered by worldly affairs. Envy and egotism are the ornaments I wear. Ruined by laziness and sleep, I resist all pious deeds, yet I'm very active and enthusiastic to perform wicked deeds. For worldly fame and reputation, I engage in the practice of deceitfulness. Thus I am destroyed by my own greed and am always lustful. A vile, wicked man such as this, rejected by all godly people, is a constant offender. I am such a person, devoid of all good works, forever inclined toward evil, worn out and wasted by various miseries. And now the appeal. In old age, deprived of all means of success, humbled and poor, Bhakti Vinod submits his tale of grief at the feet of the Supreme Lord. Finished. Defeated. Beaten. Bad. And humiliated. I have no shelter other than you. Please be merciful. Give me your shelter. Humility. Of course, this is extreme self-deprecation. So I'll just share this with you also. I've been studying a little bit. A very wonderful book by Sanatan Goswami that our Bhaktivedanta Book Trust will be publishing very soon. Brihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatan Goswami. It's many things. Essentially, it's an explanation of the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam in the form of two stories. One story is Narada Muni's search for who is the greatest recipient of the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And he goes from person to person, and each person he approaches, he's referred to by another person as a great recipient of the Lord's mercy, and as he approaches and glorifies that devotee, they offer expressions of humility. No, not at all. I'm not a recipient of the Lord's mercy. I'll tell you why. Here's everything bad about me. I'm bad this way and bad that way, and I make mistakes and I do things wrong and I have wrong desires and I don't have the mercy of the Lord, but if you want to know one who has the mercy of the Lord, go to so-and-so. They're great this way, they're great this way, they're great that, they're wonderful. Go to that devotee, and Nari goes to that devotee and sees that devotee and sees them engaged in wonderful service and worship and glorifies them this way, that way, and they say, no. Humility. It's a very, very intriguing literature. In many ways, it's like a fine art with millions of little tiny brush strokes that you can study and analyze with your ear, just hear it and hear it explained and appreciate it and see how it fits together with the whole composition. And it's just fantastic. It's very subtle, very, very beautifully composed. But it's giving a whole summary of so many details of the teachings of Vaishnava philosophy and the etiquette and the culture and Vaishnava achar, Vaishnava etiquette, and the glories of exalted devotees. Anyway, it's so nice. So this principle of expressing one's own humility, or one's own lack of good standing. Sometimes devotees do this, and we know that's not how they feel. It's pretense. It's something, a show only, and that's not good. Still, we have to cultivate humility. So at least internally, or say even primarily internally, we need to abandon our false shelters. Remember I said with the introduction to this, there are three parts of the surrendering. With our words we give expression, within our minds we contemplate the subject of surrender, how to surrender, and with our body we do it. Body, mind, and words. Words, mind, and body. We engage them all in each of the limbs of surrender. So with this item of humility, we practice in a standard and regulative way. We practice, just like for us, we offer our obeisances. We address one another as Prabhu. We have our rituals, as they say. Things that we do that help us. But those helpers have to be accompanied by something internal. Inward cultivation of the mood of humility, which requires being a little thoughtful, being a little self-reflective. What are the false shelters? What are the entanglements in false ego that I have stored up, and abandon them and call out for help to Krishna to give us shelter? So now we're going to sing the final song of this section. And actually we're going to do it twice, by two different singers, this one. So again, this is Rati.